present the News Quiz with your host, Sandy Toksvig.
Welcome to the News Quiz. We start with a sign on a cable car in Wellington, New Zealand, read by Harriet Cass.
We regret that our wind speed indicator has been blown away in the recent gales.
And our thanks to John Carter of Stockton-on-Tees for sending in a photo of that. It's a fine radio thing. Now let's meet the teams. We welcome first on my right, Jeremy Hardy and Clive Coleman. And opposite them on my left, Alan Corran and Dave Gorman. Jeremy, which war leader went AWOL this week?
This is Blair, who missed his own debate. It was a debate about his war, or rather his craven submission to Bush's whims and fancies. He went off because he had a meeting with his party planner, who's organising his leaving do, and arranging the disco and bringing back 2,000 troops from Iraq to keep order and prevent the celebrations fomenting full-blown revolution when Blair does go. And meanwhile, on the other side of the Atlantic, his lord and master, Bush, was doing the State of the Union address. I didn't know Bush was in a union. It's hard to imagine which one amalgamated half-wits and general warmongers. But he didn't mention very much of Iraq at all. He just said about using less petrol, making petrol bombs, just using a bit of white spirit.
Anybody surprised that Blair didn't turn up? I was surprised he was at the CBI. I presumed he was helping police with their inquiries. I thought that would be...
I think he thought that he was actually in the debate. I think he confused CBI for confront Blair on Iraq.
Well, you can't blame Blair for not turning up, really. As a dog-breeding friend of mine remarked, he's not the first son of a bitch who didn't want his nose rubbed in the mess he's made. There's actually a supplementary question, and I wonder how many people actually noticed this. Can anyone tell me, while Blair was sneaking out of Parliament, what did we learn this week had been successfully snuck in? I think I'm not really allowed to tell you, is the truth of it.
Don't know.
But it's sort of shocking. A bill to exempt MPs from inquiries made under the Freedom of Information Act was sneaked through the Commons, and I don't know how many people know about it, because it was on the same day that Ruth Turner was arrested. And it was snuck through. And yes, did anybody realise that it had been snuck? Is that shocking? It's good to see you all taking an interest in the democracy. So it's 2 points to Jeremy and one to me, because I was the only one who knew about the Freedom of Information Act. Clive, whose career has been rocked by some jailhouse blues?
I think that this is John Reid. The Home Secretary, who this week wrote to all the judges in the country and asked them to think very carefully before they sent anyone to prison. Now, I might be missing something here. I kind of thought that was part of the job description anyway. It's been a very bad week for John Reid. I think at the beginning of the week he said that he was going to split the Home Office in two, which is an interesting suggestion. I think there were, last week wasn't it, there were 27,000 files of Brits who had convictions from abroad and they didn't make their way onto the police computer. And very sensible, because if you split the Home Office into two, that's only 13,500 files per department that's gone missing.
Looks better already, doesn't it?
Split it into 27,000 departments, that's just one file per department. Job done.
They are our criminals abroad, though. I think we should be supporting our criminals. If you don't agree with crime starting in the first place, but once it's underway, I think we have a duty to back our criminals.
He doesn't want them to go to prison because there aren't any prisons. I mean, the prisons are totally full. Mm. And if you've done anything, you have to go privately now. I think that'd be a terrific idea.
They've bought two prison ships. Actually, they've bought two prison ships to put people in, which will then founder off the coast. And criminals will break into them and steal criminals.
Yes, indeed. It's yet another bad week for the Home Office. The country's booming prison population has forced John Reid to abandon his right-wing principles in favour of urging judges not to send criminals to a prison wing. There's a wicked whisper that Gordon Brown, when he becomes Prime Minister, plans to demote John Reid to the Fisheries Ministry, where presumably he would be not fit for purpose. 2 points to Clive. Dave, which mass movement wants minority rights?
The Catholic Church,
yes.
Presumably. This is the row over adoption agencies who want to be exempt from equality law. which I have a vested interest in because it's not something I've ever really talked about in public, but I spent a large part of my childhood being raised by gay parents. I didn't really, it's just my father listens. and the mental image in my head of him dropping his toast as this goes out, is it was worth saying that just for that.
I sort of wish I'd been raised by gays because I'd like musicals and there's nothing else on in the West End. I'd have somewhere to go in the evening.
I saw the Roman Catholic spokesman on child welfare, Father Pete O'File, talking about this. I thought, do you really think you're well placed to judge other people when it comes to the care of children? Aren't children better off cared for by people who've come to terms with their sexuality rather than by people who are sublimating it by joining the armed forces and the clergy?
Yes, you're absolutely right. To the Catholic Church. The Catholic Church has been backed, in fact, by the Church of England in its challenge to new legislation, which means adoption agencies will no longer be able to discriminate against homosexual couples. The row over the Church's bid for exemption has split the Cabinet into two camps.
Don't.
2 points to Dave. Alan, let's have a listen to this. I feel shipwrecked. Alan, which beach bums thought their ship had come in?
It's the Napoli, is the boat. I've forgotten the name of the beach. It's in Dorset.
It's Branscombe Beach.
Branscombe Beach. There's huge confusion here because there's a long chain of not being able to arrest these people. The police said they didn't have the resources. But basically, I think it was John Reed on a mobile phone saying, for Christ's sake, let the buggers go. We haven't got a chokey to put them after me, and especially if they're riding a motorbike and carrying a big crate.
15 BMW motorbikes. They were taken away by, the police said, taken away by an organised gang. And you thought, what, did they drive away in a pyramid formation?
It must remain something of a German dream to have 15 BMWs land on a beach and then manage to get inland. They worked it so hard.
What's fascinating through the day listening to the news broadcast change, because the first broadcast about it, it was just a jolly whiskey galore type story.
Yeah.
And the news journalists had the attitude of, good on you, you got yourself a BMW, you plucky little thing. 3 hours later, what a terrible scene is happening on Branscombe Beach. Because the police had basically been in touch with the news and said, no, they're stealing.
I didn't know so much stuff was still sent by barrel.
I think the ship was importing barrels from some barrel-making colony that we own. But there was nothing in it. Really empty.
It's terrible when a ship full of empty barrels can sink. It should be the most buoyant ship of the world.
And at the end of round one, the scores are Jeremy and Clive have got 4, but so have Alan and Dave. Start round two with a notice in the Rossshire Journal.
Lost since July from Clach na Harry, Inverness. 10-year-old fluffy beige tomcat, only partially neutered.
Thanks to Mark Weir for spotting that. Jeremy, who's weighed into the debate about weight?
The House of Commons Fat Standards Committee. They've been talking about fatness. It's basically, people are fat because they eat too much. Generally speaking, it's not exercise because I don't exercise at all and I'm not fat apart from a rather manly little tummy, but fat people generally eat too much. You can tell this because if you look at a fat person, they will be eating or swimming. Proves it's nothing to do with exercise. Swimming pools are full of fat people. But maybe it's something about chlorine makes people blow up, I don't know. They're going to have a fat czar, which would be a horrible job. So you're the fat czar. I'm the minister with responsibility for obesity, but imagine having the name fat czar.
One of the dafter recommendations was by Prue Leith, who was involved in this, who said that parents should withdraw pocket money from children that eat sweets. And you wonder what sort of world they live in. And they want a world of parents dangling from ropes in the cellar. Or that you can stop a child that wants to eat sweets from taking the money off a kid who doesn't buy sweets.
There was one suggestion that it's wrong for teachers to tell parents that children are fat. And I thought, if teachers have to point out to parents that their children are fat, that is only the beginning of a much bigger problem. Unless your child was at boarding school, you'd know that your child was fat. Get a phone call. Really? How big is he? He wasn't that big when I dropped him off. Mind you, he was only six there. He must be about 14 now. Well, keep an eye on him for me. Don't let him eat any more, please. I'm paying a great deal of money. I don't want you to turn him into a tub of lard.
Best way to handle childhood obesity, and this used to happen in kids' TV shows when I was a child, things like The Double Deckers, is what you need is some timpani drums. And then whenever the fat kid enters the room, somebody goes, boom, 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 and they soon snap out of it.
Well, it's like that Australian who got done by a shark during the week. You would have thought the music would have alerted him. The thing was nothing.
It'd be very hard not to do that if you were a shark, wouldn't you? You'd just be stalking your prey and just really wanting to go, wouldn't you?
It was such a bizarre story as well, wasn't it? Because he said, I had the presence of mind to feel around for his eye with my chisel.
His what?
Chisel. What? He had a chisel in his hand.
Was it a hammer shark?
Anyway, the story that we were talking about, a report by...
I'm a head shark, I should have said, shouldn't I? That won't work now. Edit this in, somebody. Was it a hammerhead shark? Sorry, carry on, Stan.
A report by MPs warns that an entire generation of children is at risk from rising levels of obesity. Recent research has suggested that most children scoff at exercise. Clive, who's been checking out accusations of cashing in?
I think this is something to do with another inquiry into the dominance of the supermarkets. Oh. The thing that struck me about it was that apparently some of the suppliers, the growers, the farmers, are actually very scared to talk publicly, and I think that the Competition Commissioner has offered them confidentiality or anonymity, and in some cases they're actually going to be put on witness protection schemes. So if you're a cauliflower grower from Essex and you go and talk to the Commissioner for 2-3 years, you'll avoid all major vegetables and fruit for that period, and you'll think it's fine, and then you'll get a knock on the door and he'll be there. Sir Terry Leahy, Tesco boss of bosses, and he'll say to you, you've been talking, haven't you? And you'll have to cough up to it, and nothing probably will happen that day, but you'll wake up the next day and there'll be a bloody great head of broccoli on the pillow beside you.
This week saw the publication of the Competition Commission's preliminary report into Britain's supermarkets. The Commission is investigating the market dominance of supermarkets Tesco, Asda, Sainsbury's and Morrison's. Her Majesty's Stationery Office, you can buy the whole report for £9.99, although Tesco's have got it for £4.87. 2 points to Clive. Dave, have a listen to this.
Daddy was the train. Is it something I can ride? Does it carry lots of grown-up folks and little kids inside? Is it bigger than our house? Well, how can I explain when my little boy asked me, Daddy, what's a train?
Who's been standing shoulder to shoulder in search of a seat?
Oi, don't tell him.
They're just arranging to meet later.
It's Great Western
Trains. No, it's trains. It's commuters. They've taken carriages off trains and increased prices. There are more passengers spending more with fewer seats. It's a bargain.
It's about this Bristol to Bath run where they had a strike, isn't it? And they issued false tickets. They're rather enterprising.
It was a protest. Hmm. They issued free tickets to travel.
You couldn't really prosecute people for that protest, could you? Because you couldn't come up with a punishment that was actually worse than having to sit on that train for 3 hours in the morning.
Unhappy commuters on the first Great Western service, so-called because it's run by cowboys, between Bath and Bristol, handed in fake tickets in protest at constant overcrowding on the trains. The company claims it serves its passengers' needs, that things will soon improve, and that the fat controller is a real person. 2 points to Dave. Alan, who's been working not to be middle of the class?
Although England is still penetrated by class consciousness and class awareness and class terror and class hatred and class desire, people don't really know what class they are, and they all think they're middle class. Except about three people. I mean, the Duchess of Devonshire at one end, and there's a rather lonely man who talks to himself at the other end, thinks he's working. Everybody else is middle class. But we have no idea what class we are, but we're still obsessed by it.
Well, apparently it's that 57% of adults claim to be working class, despite only 31% of the population being in working class jobs.
Oh, there was a real answer to that question then.
Yes, no.
It wasn't just waffle.
No. Apparently it's the thing now, it's we want to be working class. So, Jeremy, what class are you?
Lower middle.
Lower middle, I like that. Nine, what are you?
I'm probably slightly higher than Jeremy.
Well, my dad was a baronet, but my mum was a street child in Brazil. So it kind of averages out.
Those mixed marriages never work, Jeremy, do they?
Not really. Different sexes, you see. Always had gay parents.
What are you, Alan? Are you working or middle?
Oh, my family had no class at all.
No, lower middle, comprehensive school, car on the drive, holidayed in Wales, both parents had jobs.
Well, apparently, most people want to be working class. Critics have pointed out that the survey may have been biased towards the working class, as boxes for yes and no had been replaced with oi and do what?
Is that how they speak, the poor people?
I don't know, I've never met one.
I hear they're very good with their hands.
I think that you can tell class by how people react to an aubergine. I do. Working class people think, what the hell is that? Middle class people think, well, I'll make a ratatouille. And upper class people think, I could incorporate that in my lovemaking.
I know a very good John Gielgud story involving a ratatouille.
At the end of round two, Jeremy and Clive have got 9 points and Alan and Dave have got 8. And before we start round three, here's a listing from the Radio Times.
10:30 this morning. The theme this week is raising awareness of mental health and depression issues, including 11:20 Dancing on Ice special.
And our thanks to Christopher McCready of Oxford for that. Jeremy, whose research has thrown up some very sound conclusions?
This is the throwing up story. They did tests on what are the most horrible noises, and the one that came out top was the sound of someone being sick, which is why they always have very loud music at fashion shows, because behind the scenes... But, yeah, it was like fingers on blackboards, dolphins being put through a mangle. I can't abide when people rub their fork on their teeth when they've put their food in their mouth. That's what gets me. Oh.
And the way they did it, apparently, was that they got an actor to drink a can of baked beans and then throw up into a bucket. That's how they recreated the worst sound. But I think it would have been a lot worse just to hear the actor say, I really don't understand my motivation for this part.
So really, the worst sound is the sound of an actor regurgitating half a can of beans.
Yeah.
Why don't they just get someone to throw up and record it?
This was a university. It was got 30,000 students. It's all the other university. It was throwing up.
A year-long quest by Salford University. Is there such a thing? To find... Surely that's a polytechnic.
Could you try doing that again in an upper-class accent?
The thing is, I don't really have a proper accent. I came to this country when I was 14 with a heavy New York accent and went to boarding school and was immediately put into Coventry by the charming girls that I joined in the dormitory. And I had to learn to speak with an English accent. And the only thing I had was a black-and-white copy of Brief Encounter. I am trapped in the black and white film, it's true.
You could have done the Stanley Holloway part. Cool, Lummy, that's a right palaver. The fantastic thing about Brief Encounters, it's all set in Yorkshire. But actors in those days only had one working class accent, and it was Cockaninny. How do they speak in the North Country? Oh,
I must say. Really fantastic about Brief Encounters. Do you know how old Trevor Howard was as the middle-aged doctor in the Rover 12?
29.
He's 29.
I know.
It's extraordinary.
It's scary.
Steve Johnson was 31, and I've got children older than both of them.
It's scarier that you both know that.
People used to be older. You know, when the last episode of Dad's Army was made in 1977, Arnold Ridley was only 23 years old.
Sandy, when you turned up at boarding school with your New York accent, had you actually been to New York, or were you just extremely precocious?
She learnt it from a video of Mean Street. She brought that in her tiny Danish village.
2 points to Jeremy. Clive, have a listen to this. Chilling for the brother who brings the sheep in. Chilling for the brother who milks the herd. Chilling for the brother with the wife for keeping. How can we be love on a farm, boys? Love on a farm, boys. Love on a farm, boys. Wait, yeah. That was young young people's music. Clive, lonely...
As the youngest person here, can I refute that?
Clive, lonely farmers in Wales are putting photographs... Oh, that's the answer. Two points, Clive, if you can tell me what the question is.
We're going to supplementary point to tell you what this Welshman's name was.
Yes.
Evans.
No, it's wrong.
Ewan Jones.
It's Ewan Jones. So 1 point to the other side for the interruption.
Right.
Clive, do you know what the question's going to be?
The question is to do with the music. What are lonely people on farms doing these days?
Well, that would be a wider question, I feel.
pretty much what they've always done.
Clive, who's milking the fact that they're ever so lonely?
Well, okay, I think this might be about some lonely people on farms.
Which part of the world are we in?
Wales?
Yes.
And they couldn't stand the loneliness, and so they've gone to the cities. And the people who are remaining there, who are also lonely, have decided that the only way to meet a partner is to put stickers of photographs of themselves onto thousands and thousands of milk cartons. And I think it's been quite controversial, because I think the ladies have said that the guys look a lot slimmer on the semi-skimmed than they do on the others. But they've done that, and I think they also put not just their picture, but their interests. I've read one guy put down, I think, girls, football, and sticking thousands of pictures of myself on cartons of milk. It's a last-gasp attempt for lonely country people to meet other people.
I like this idea. You were talking about the semi-skim thing. You could have different milks for different what you're looking for. Full fat for a big girl.
Yeah.
Skimmed milk, you want a thin girl. UHT, yeah. One with no taste.
Homogenised if you're trying to adopt.
Yes, indeed. Lonely farmers in Wales, which is the answer, are putting photographs of themselves on milk cartons in the hope of finding a wife. And apparently, traditionally, Welshmen present their sweethearts with a carved wooden spoon. It's no wonder you haven't got a girlfriend. Women want food, they don't want cutlery. 2 points to Clive. Dave, who has put to flight 125 million years before the rights?
Need any help with this?
Yeah.
I don't know why. It's a biplane dinosaur.
I'll say it's a dinosaur.
You have to remember that Dave doesn't do the news quiz that often. Those of us who do know that a new dinosaur comes up every week.
And a biplane one. It's a gift, dinosaur. Frankly, for the news quiz.
Yes. I know this. It's a biplane dinosaur.
Yeah. How did they know it was a biplane?
Presumably because they found its boarding cards.
Yes. It's wearing goggles, leather jacket. What I liked about the flying dinosaur, it said the remains were unearthed from inside a giant slab of rock. I thought it was not that good at flying then, was it?
It's a cartoon dinosaur.
You know,
Acme Dinosaur Company.
Were you expecting to find a fossil in a cloud? It sounds to be in rock. It's a fossil.
I know. Anyway, it's called the Microraptor Gui, a tree-dwelling dinosaur whose fossilized remains were unearthed in China, purely for the benefit of a last-round question on the news quiz. Scientists now believe that this extinct creature flew by arranging its upper and lower wings to resemble a biplane. Apparently, it was the forefather of all modern birds. I think this is terribly not PC of me, but if anybody mentions a link between modern birds and dinosaurs, I immediately think of Catherine Zeta-Jones and Michael Jackson. that was 2 points to Dave. Alan, I say. Who's got the oldest joke book in England?
I didn't see this in the papers, but turn on the news and there's some very, very thin stand-up comic in a T-shirt telling jokes in Yorkshire. It was either from a Yorkshire joke book, which had been lost. It's the oldest joke book in the world. It predates Joe Allen, and he was telling...
Blackpool,
yes. I think you want to do a couple of the jokes, Dave.
I know one of the punchlines, but I can't remember the setup. One is the Maid of Orleans, and one is... What's the difference between...
Oh, there's a Dunting Joan of Arc and any other arc. One is made of wood and the other is made of Orleans.
Yeah.
Terrific. I don't know. The audience is laughing a bit.
I first sample, actually, one of the jokes. Women... They ease life's shocks. They mend our socks, but can't they spend the money? The jokes of Victorian clown Tom Lawrence got their first run out in 100 years at Blackpool Grand Theatre on Thursday after being unearthed by Dr. Anne Featherstone of Manchester University. And apparently in his time, Tom Lawrence worked all over the country. Well, I'd say with those gags, you're not likely to get booked twice in the same place. So before we reveal the final scores, let's hear the cuttings that the teams have brought along. Jeremy.
This was sent in by Andrew Curry from Gwynedd, and it's from the Wolverhampton Chronicle. It's an ad, and it says, Asian gentleman, tall, honest, suffers from Tourette syndrome, obsessive compulsive disorder, and paranoid schizophrenia. Also impotent. Would like to meet attractive professional lady for possible relationship with you to marriage.
Clive.
This one is from Norman Beaumont in Rockley, Hampshire. A postman successfully delivered a letter marked only with a name, a map of southwest England, and the words, somewhere here. A sketch on the envelope showed Cornwall, Devon and Somerset with an arrow pointing towards a dot, but postal staff worked out that the intended address was imbued North Cornwall, and staff in the local post office recognised the name written on the envelope as Peter O'Leary. The letter apparently was from a former colleague who was trying to get back in touch, but sadly for Mr. O'Leary, the sender failed to enclose his own address.
Dave.
Well, my absolute favourite that's been sent in this week was sent in by Michael Munters. It's from The Star. An inquiry has started after a bus was driven for more than 200 miles on passenger journeys in South Yorkshire with a loose wheel. Yorkshire Traction said it was an isolated incident, the first for 5 years, and denied passengers were at risk because the vehicle would have stopped if the wheel had fallen off.
Sandy, it's from the Nottingham News. It says, despite complaints from local residents, an S&M club in Stapleford has escaped the law thanks to a licence to operate as a physiotherapy salon. We'd like to close it down, said a police spokesman, but our hands are tied.
Right, let's take a look at the final score. Jeremy and Clive have got 13 points, but this week's winners are Alan and Dave with 14. And before we leave you, here's an excerpt from the calendar section of Coventry Cathedral's newsletter.
Friday the 16th, 7 p.m, speed dating. Wednesday the 21st, 7:30 p.m, the recovering from divorce and separation course.
And with that, goodbye.
Taking part in the news quiz were Jeremy Hardy, Clive Coleman, Dave Gorman and Alan Cohen. In the chair was Sandy Toxford and the news was read by me, Harriet Cass. The chair script was written by Simon Littlefield, Roderick Crook, George Coles and Daniel Ward. And the producer was Ed Morris.